We are back. This is the Tate Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. We are joined by the author, David Gabriel-Michael, Habte. And Habte, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
You can see we're flummoxed here. We're running from one thing to another. By the way, we just heard some great music. And you helped us choose it. What is that music?
It actually describes the patience and the resilience the people of Eritrea showed over the past 67 years to attain their independence and to promote the idea of self-reliance, that with patience and with determination to succeed, there is nothing that they cannot attain. Mm-hmm. So the song is actually by an amazing young man, Isaias. He was also known as Haleka, who is actually here in Toronto.
He's here in Toronto now?
Yes, he's right here. We were partying with him last night.
I've got to get more. I need more resources. We should have twisted your arm and asked him to please introduce us to this man. We're going to try to do more. As you know, this is a North American environment, and we tend to be very parochial and ignorant here, frankly. We don't know about the Horn of Africa. We don't understand the long history of your country, Ethiopia. Our knowledge of it is roughly associated with World War II. We know Mussolini and Haile Selassie. But we really are missing a wonderful tie. I mean, like, for example, this great music.
Yep.
This gentleman you'd name, and I confess, you know, that we should know and do not. So, but anyway, on that matter, you know, the community, it must be at this moment much more animated than usual, because you have this development of Ethiopia and Eritrea mm-hmm. in a very short period of time, after years of acrimony, talking to. How's the community reacting, and are they positive, negative? What's the feeling, and what is your feeling about it?
Well, let me actually start thanking you for this opportunity and for giving your audience an opportunity also to learn, as you stated, of an area that's not widely known in terms of its historical significance. Mm-hmm. And its contribution to the larger global history as well. Geographically, Eritrea is located by the Red Sea and is bordered by Ethiopia from the south, Sudan from the north and west, the Red Sea on the east side, and we have Saudi and Yemen across mm-hmm. from the Red Sea. We also have the small city or country of Djibouti from the south.
Uh-huh.
Now, historically, these regions, or the region known as East Africa, its destination is bound to be, the region is bound to have a common destination.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, due to the nature and the importance of Suez Canal, since its opening, that region, and specifically Eritrea, has been a pawn in the global politics. It became a battlefront of both the West and the East. And
the Suez Canal.
The Suez Canal.
contributed to the problem.
Absolutely.
To the issues.
Mm-hmm. To the issues. And starting the end of World War II, we're talking about more than 70 years. Ethiopia, with the help of the superpowers, specifically the United States, has been squandering its natural resources and its youth fighting against Eritrea's independence. And this lasted four successive leaders, governments within Ethiopia, starting from Haile Selassie, who literally wasted the lives of hundreds of Ethiopian youth and a great deal of financial assistance that came from the West, especially from the United States, fighting against the opportunity for the Eritreans to have an opportunity to declare for self-determination, to vote for their independence. Yeah. That was supposed to have been ruled by the UN back in the 40s.
Yeah.
Followed by Mengistu Haile Mariam, who also killed hundreds of thousands of Ethiopians fighting against the movements that were fighting for Eritrean independence. And after independence, which is 1991, which was de facto, and Eritreans voted for independence in 1993, the new government that was ruling Ethiopia, which represented 6% of Ethiopians, was not satisfied with the approach of Eritreans, which was more focused on mutual development, mutual growth of the region.
Yeah.
And it declared war against Eritrea in the form of border conflict in 1997. Mm-hmm. This lasted for 21 years. A new leader by the name of Dr. Abiy came, and all he did was accept the ruling of a border demarcation that was rendered by the Eritrean-Ethiopian Border Commission in Hague. So from the Eritrean side, this has been a peace negotiation that they accepted 21 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Ethiopians, with the support of the United States, refused to accept the legal demarcation of the border. And this young 42 years old president, prime minister, all he did was, I am accepting the decision that was based on a final and binding agreement his predecessors signed. So
it's not as though he invented a solution. The solution was already there. He accepted that.
He's accepted it. He was the first one in three generations of leadership within Ethiopia to accept a peace deal that his predecessors signed as a final and binding. Now, the question which comes to your question, what is the peace dividend for both nations?
Yeah.
I think the peace dividend is bigger than Eritrea and Ethiopia. It impacts the entire region. It's already impacting Somalia. The Somali president was in Eritrea a couple of weeks ago. The Ethiopian prime minister was in Eritrea. The Eritrean president was in Ethiopia. And hopefully the Sudan and hopefully, again, the Kenyans will be following. And eventually the Djiboutians or Djibouti president might also follow suit. So the peace dividend for this region is a mutual development as opposed to what we had seen over the past 21 years, which is a mutual destruction that was purely orchestrated by a minority in Ethiopia, which was ruling the entire Ethiopian the Ethiopian nation. So the challenge for Ethiopia is now the majority are in power. Are the minority going to accept the ruling of the majority? In Eritrea, Eritrean policy has been clear from the get-go. Eritrea believed and still believes in settler lands and in having mutual respect among the different traditions within Eritrea. Mm-hmm. Eritrea has nine traditions with nine languages.
And nine languages.
Nine languages. And part of the policy of Eritrean government is this idea that an individual's birthplace, regardless how far it might be from the capital city, should not determine the fate of that individual. That individual should be able to have access, equal access to education, equal access to health, equal access to communications. Unless that opportunity is presented equally, then the level field will not be equal when it comes to having equal opportunity for growth and development.
Yeah.
So that is also the idea that has been getting challenged by the superpowers. And you know who I'm talking about.
I'm sorry, the last point?
It has been challenged by the superpowers.
Yes.
And you know who I'm talking about when I say superpowers.
Well, there's certainly one I know very well, which raises the issue. Eritrea has set really a splendid example of a relatively poor country but self-reliant, which shares the wealth it has. And I know that the president I find him very eloquent on the subject. He is the president.
Yes.
He said they were given a model. The World Bank said, we'll come and we will organize your economy. He said, well, no. We have to determine what kind of economy we want. They would like you to be under superpower diktat, basically, in economics. He didn't care. He said we're not. He resisted that. Eritrea has had to suffer, or I shouldn't know if it's been suffering. It's been put under stress by the superpowers, and particularly, I don't know if I'm using the right word, sanctions, but certainly economically, they've been trying to it's been rather under siege. Is that going to end?
We are hoping so. We actually do hope the sanctions will end sooner than later.
It should, right?
I mean, the reason is, first, the sanctions are illegal and unjustified.
Mm-hmm.
The sanctions were instituted in 2009, but 2 years later, the same commission that was set up to monitor the area declared they were not able to find evidence for the imposition of the sanctions.
Yeah, wasn't the excuse that they claimed that Eritrea was involved with, Somalia?
Yes.
Now that, by the way, that accusation can go all around the region. You could accuse any state in the region, but they decided that they were going to just name Eritrea as the bad party.
But again, let's push the date a little farther. In 1993, Eritrean president came to the United States and it's documented where he said Osama bin Laden is in the Sudan, so it's time to deal with him and with his organization. Nobody paid attention. So Eritrea has been in the forefront fighting against extremism in any form.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
I'm very glad you documented that. We've been on the air so long, I can remember we discussed it here.
Yes.
That he was located, and the question was, why isn't something done? And it had to do with who his friends in Washington were and who his friends elsewhere in the region were.
So
they were protecting him.
Absolutely. And Eritrea can be accused of many things, including becoming a threat of a good example. But Eritrea can never be accused of supporting extremism.
Mm-hmm.
Eritrea, especially the Eritrean government, has been in the forefront promoting harmony within its societies, within the cultures that are in the nine cultures within Eritrea,
mm-hmm.
promoting harmony within the Eastern African region. And unfortunately, the country has been dealt in unfortunate way for the past, God knows how many years, for the past 20 years. And now Eritrea is finally, I'm hoping that Eritrea will get its place in history
mm-hmm.
in terms of promoting regional stability, promoting peace across the Eastern African region. And so far, the indications appear to be promising. Again, the Ethiopian Prime Minister was in Eritrea. The Somali ambassador was in Eritrea. Hopefully, the Kenyan will follow, and then the Sudanese will follow, and hopefully, the Djiboutian president will also come and Eritrea will be the epicenter of peace and stability in the East African region.
Yeah. We're speaking to Dawit Gabriel Mikhail Habte. He's the author of Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir, Rosetta Books, 2017. I like the theme, that this isn't just about Eritrea, Ethiopia. This is going to be something, a regional opportunity to relations go back to normal.
Beyond normal.
I want to ask you the question. There was a period where the superpowers, particularly the one Washington, had this became messianic, and it was going to determine who would do what in the name of a bunch of values. All of them seemed to be distributed between Chicago and New York, on everybody globally, and they got involved in a lot of adventures and created havoc for countries like in the Horn of Africa. The Marines had been in Somalia. We all remember three or four times there have been horrible situations there where they attempted almost to be raw colonialists, you know. But I get the impression now that they've kind of run the course with this idea of global hegemony. At least they're not finding it so easy. There seems to be more expression of in the regions of, I would say, an autonomy or a determination to rule their own, you know, to shake off the chains of hegemony from the West.
And Eritrea has been in the forefront.
Well, done it.
They have done it.
They didn't put the chains on. their neighbors had chains.
Well, as you, I think, alluded initially at the beginning, one way the superpower use the chains around, be it the arms or legs of the leadership, is through the IMF and the World Bank, mm-hmm. where they design supposedly the country's economic programs. And Eritrea rightfully stated, we are capable of designing our programs. We might have some shortcomings in some we might have some technical challenges, which we are willing to accept assistance, but that assistance has to be in our terms. Mm. It has to be in such a way that it promotes knowledge transfer. We cannot be relying on external knowledge indefinitely. We have capable youth that can actually learn and apply any technology or technical trainings. That's the only way you could have sustainable growth. Mm-hmm. Now, back to the other side, which you mentioned, the global hegemony. One way the superpower have been applying this divide and rule approach in Africa is basically by promoting the minorities within a nation, bringing them to power at the cost of the majority. And that's exactly what happened in Ethiopia. Back in 1991, these groups or junta that represented 6% of the Ethiopian population came to power. Yeah. And they planted this poisonous idea within Ethiopia where they split the nation on ethnic groups. So they called it ethnic federalism.
Ethnic federalism.
Correct.
Yeah.
And
happy thought.
So that instigated this division and hatred within Ethiopia that never actually existed.
By the way,
it
didn't actually fool people. People saw what was going on. They just didn't have power, right?
They didn't have power, and the minorities, they had this unlimited financial flow from the superpower. Hmm. From the United States. And that made it extremely difficult for the majority to rise up. Eventually, they are able to rise up. And in fact, about 2-3 years ago, Ethiopia was going through this ethnic cleansing, which was never known in the East African region. That is the seed that the minorities planted in the name of ethnic federalism. Mm-hmm. So the challenge of Ethiopia, the challenge of this young prime minister is to reverse it, to reverse that ethnic division, which eventually, hopefully, the country will overcome that mm-hmm. challenge and contribute to the peace and stability of the East African region.
Yeah. Well, there's some more matters we want to go into. We're speaking to Dawit Hebti. The author, by the way, the book is Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir. You can get the Internet. There's a lot of interest in this book. It's published by Rosetta Books in 2017. And it has, in its closing chapter, a wonderful thought, which is coming to fruition, which is what the dividends would be with peace between Ethiopia and Eritrea. We're going to take a break, listen to some music from Eritrea, and we will be back with Mr. Hebti. And we're back. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. There is a dramatic and historic reconciliation of sorts going on between Ethiopia, Eritrea, and the author, Dawit Hebti, is here, author of Gratitude and Low Voices, a memoir published in 2017. Dawit, your own story is quite dramatic. You left it, you were quite young. There was my memory is it had to do with the being drafted in military.
Yes.
And you and your sisters left the country through Kenya. So, and I urge everybody to get the book and read about this. So now, here you are all these years later, and you're quite successful, and you've written a very important book. And so now, what are your personal feelings about you? Do you have the urge to go and take a look at this experience? Do you have...
Yes. In terms of
do you have any fears, by the way? Do you think, oh, golly, there's some people there really don't like me or I don't like them? Or?
Well, I think we can easily state the fact that there is no such thing as a bad peace. Mm-hmm. So there is intrinsic and extrinsic values of peace. And the intrinsic value is at least we have this mindset and viewpoint that we can think in a stable manner. During the war, you are more in terms of, you are thinking from defensive posture. Mm-hmm. You are thinking from offensive posture where you might be thinking the destruction of the other, but eventually the end result becomes mutual destruction. Mm-hmm. In peace, you are more thinking, how do I collaborate with the other parties for mutual growth, for mm-hmm. mutual development? So that by end of itself is a positive outcome of peace. Now, for the extrinsic value, there is movement of freedom of movement of people. East African region is a large region. People being able to move freely within that region itself is a huge, huge development. Mm. By collaborating with each other in terms of communications, technology, economics, you are bound to grow at a much faster speed. Mm-hmm. From my personal perspective, I'm not fearful, actually. I'm more hopeful in that the Prime Minister of Ethiopia appears to be more or less providing hope to the people of Ethiopia. And Eritrean perspective to peace has never changed from the get-go, from the beginning. It has been consistent. We cannot grow together unless we respect each other. It starts from mutual respect. And it starts from being able to partner and work together as partners, not in this master-slave relationship. We have to get out of that mindset.
Yeah.
This includes with the superpowers.
Yeah.
This partnership, Eritrean philosophy to relationships based on partnership, yes, includes with the larger global community as well.
Yes.
Not only limited to the regional aspect of it. So you're right. I left home, Eritrea, when I was young, at the age of 14, because I was drafted to the Ethiopian army to fight against my uncles, my cousins, and some of them also my dear friends who were on the other side of the war, who are actually part of the Eritrean.
That's a true civil war. They ask you to fight your own relatives.
I wouldn't phrase it as a civil war, because there is a lineage in terms of Eritrean history and Ethiopian history where they actually diverge. So it was more of a society that was betrayed by the international community that was fighting for its self-determination.
Yes.
So I left with my sister and with my sister's friend, who eventually became my sister-in-law, in 1989. We flew to Addis, and eventually we took trucks, and sometimes we walked by the bush in the southern part of Ethiopia, and we landed in prison in Kenya. And we went through the whole legal process at the age of 14 again in Kenya, and then we went to the refugee camp. But in the process, there were a lot of good-hearted individuals who actually helped us.
Yes.
There was a friend of my father who actually came to the prison in the northern part of Kenya, who actually bailed us out. Well, the bail was a bribe, actually, for the Kenyan officials.
Well, but very often that's what bail is. Yes.
Correct. and eventually we ended up...
By the way, isn't that a wonderful thing, family strength? Isn't that something?
It is amazing. In college, I learned the term nuclear family and extended family members. In Africa, nuclear family includes the cousins, the uncles, the grandmother, grandfather, everyone who lived in this house.
One for all and
one
all for all.
All and all for one. Unfortunately, in the Western society, nuclear family includes only the limited individuals who live.
I think we've had a nuclear explosion, frankly, and I can't quite account for it. I'm going to hire a sociologist to explain to me. But I don't find that. I lived in Tanzania for a while. I worked in Arusha. And I was just awestruck by the strength of families and their ability to sustain each other. And one poor relative would be half a continent away, and they would all work to solve the problem. But you wouldn't know it. They were all so busy with their own affairs, but they never forgot that we have to do something for so-and-so.
I think that's the biggest message of my book, is of gratitude in low voices, is even though we were forced to leave home, home is still home. Mm-hmm. So we have, we immigrants, first generation immigrants, we have to be able to tell our story with the proper context. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, context matters.
Yes.
We have to contextualize it. And I have tried to paint a good image mm-hmm. of what it means to grow up in Eritrea, in mm-hmm. both in the city, in the capital city, and in a remote village called Adayo, where my parents hail from.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the challenge is upon us, upon mm-hmm. first-generation immigrants, to tell our story with the proper context. So yeah. I have tried to narrate that in
my book. We need another book from you. This is Dawid Hebti, Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir of Rosetta Books, 2017. And I love this. We're in the internet period, so I know you can all go and find this book. That's probably my phone trying to talk to me. Don't be concerned. The further question I have is, I'm impressed with the president of Eritrea, Isaias Afwerki. Is that, am I pronouncing
yes,
it right?
Yes, Isaias Afwerki.
Isaias. Because the stress he put in the interviews I've seen is his first concern was that they not allow the society to become divided as the world is seeing now. This is, we now talk about this in Canada, the U.S., and around the world, is the, what we call the gap or canyon between the wealthy and the poor. And that was his first thing he keeps in interviews I see with him. He says, we are not going to allow that to happen.
Yes.
And that would be, of course, we say now you have, Ethiopia has 100 million people.
Yep.
And has been on another model. So yep. How do you see this developing?
The international media, the main media, have been trying to demonize this man indefinitely. And the few things that this man stands for and has said is, one, we have to believe in our youth.
Yeah.
The capability of our youth to be able to learn and implement whatever technology it is, whatever new knowledge it is. That's one. The second one is, which you articulated well, is we do need support, but that support has to be in a form that we acquire knowledge out of it, so that the support and the knowledge transfer is sustainable. It should not be in a form of aid that makes us dependent indefinitely.
Yes, he uses the expression aid trap.
Aid trap, yes.
And that has been aid so true around the world.
Let's be honest here. In some
it's
societies...
It's also a debt trap.
In some societies in the Western developing nations, your zip code determines your success rate.
Yes. Yes.
Where you end up in life.
Whether they loan you money or not depends on what zip code you're
absolutely.
In.
Whether you get a good education or not depends on the zip code that you are born in.
Yeah.
So that zip code determines your fate. And his fundamental belief is Eritreans paid to attain their independence equally. The poor and the rich, they all paid equally.
Hmm.
And the opportunity. This is the key word here. The opportunity given to every individual should be equal. A kid born 500, 600 miles or kilometers away from the capital city should have equal opportunity to education.
Same textbooks.
Same textbooks.
Quality teachers.
Quality teachers.
Medicine.
Medicine. Water. Health.
Those are human rights, by the way. People like to talk about them. Those are human rights.
Those are fundamental human rights.
Yeah.
And if a kid born God knows how many kilometers away from the capital does not have equal right to a good education, I'm not talking about a camp mm-hmm. where you store kids, just count grades,
yeah.
a good education. If that kid does not have that right,
yes.
What is the value of citizenship? Because when it comes to being called to defend the nation, that kid would be the first one to be called upon.
Yeah. Very well stated, and we're so glad we've been talking to Dawit Habte. He is the author of Gratitude in Low Voices, a memoir, Rosetta Books, 2017. I want to thank Phil Kahn, and I want to thank Mikhail, and I am Phil Taylor, and it's Taylor Report, and we're going to go out with a little bit of music from Eritrea, and we'll see you next week. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Phil.